This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
You can now hear Gun Rights Radio Network while you're on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. On-demand news, talk, and more on your mobile phone. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, and no memory or storage wasted. Available for your iPhone, Android phones, or your BlackBerry. Downloading is easy. Go to Stitcher.com or check out your app store. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Gun Rights Radio Network shows can be found under Sources.
What up, everybody? This is Spencer, and you are listening to my dad and his Handgun World podcast. The reason he carries a gun is because he can't carry a cop.
Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode 244. This is Mike, gonna probably sound a little bit different than what you're normally hearing, because normally you hear me cruising down the freeway in the Handgun World Mobile Studio, which is my little 12-year-old paid-for Honda that's probably gonna need a little bit of work here pretty soon. But now I'm in the comfort of a hotel room, and I forgot to bring my typical recorder that I use and the typical headset, so I'm talking to my iPad screen, which is an interesting way to do this. Haven't done this before, talk to an iPad screen. So anyway, that's what you're going to get. This podcast is on risk versus reward. Now, Ben Branham did a podcast recently. It was podcast 57 on his Modern Self-Protection, where he talked about the different risks that we take carrying a gun and going certain places and carrying self-defense weapons and things like that. So I'm kind of borrowing this topic from him. Thank you, Ben. Appreciate that. But as I'm going to take a little bit of a different slant. As I talk to you, I started thinking about a few things, about how I came to some of the decisions that I did in buying my handguns, and what to do with those handguns, and whether to keep them and modify them and train with them or not train with them, and things like that. So here goes. Let's see what you think of this. And, you know, I'm sure I'll get the appropriate types of feedback that I typically do. The first thing I want to talk about is selecting a gun. How to apply risk versus reward. Now, before I get into that, let me say this. For 28 years, I've been in sales and marketing, or mostly sales of some kind. I started in 1984, so slightly a little bit more than 28 years. And I have been through a lot of sales training programs in my career. Matter of fact, I used to work for a very well-known sales trainer. Well, just a couple of weeks ago when I was in Washington, D.C. at our national sales meeting for my real job, in case you didn't know, folks, you know, doing this podcast and firearms training, it's not my real job, it's part-time. I, as you know, am just an everyday guy. That's how I started out, that's still what I am. I'm a Yankee with a gun, born in New York City, raised in Wisconsin. Now I call Texas home. And I'm just an ordinary guy, but I've developed this great hobby and kind of a part-time job of podcasting and teaching firearms. Well, I've been through a lot of sales training, but for my real job, a couple weeks ago, we had some professional sales trainers come into Washington, D.C., where we were meeting, and give us a full one-day training seminar. Now, I got to tell you, think about me for a minute. Think about any of you who are listening to this right now, if you've been doing something 28 years. How many of you listening to this show right now have been doing your profession for 28 years or longer? I bet there's quite a few of you. Maybe not for the same company, but maybe you've been in a similar industry or a similar profession for 28 years. You start to get to the point where you wonder if there's really anything else that you can learn. And I think that's a dangerous spot to be in, very dangerous, for no matter what you're doing, not just carrying a gun, but also your profession. Just because you've been doing something a long time doesn't mean you're good at doing it. I can think of a lot of people who are not very good. As a matter of fact, I've been in sales so long, I can think of a lot of salespeople who are not very good, and they've actually been doing it longer than I have. So the time you put into something doesn't necessarily make you good at it. But I've been pretty decent for 28 years. I've made a pretty healthy living. And I've been making a living that's, you know, probably in the top one-third income category in the United States, selling stuff. And because I had some good training as a young man. So I'm sitting there with my arms crossed, kind of a little bit of a jaded attitude. You know, I'm thinking, okay, what are these guys going to teach me? I was pleasantly surprised. They taught me something that I really knew, but they put it in a way that resonated with me. And you see, that's the challenge that I have on this podcast. It's the challenge that any trainer or speaker has. Is when you're speaking to somebody who have been doing something for a long time, and you want to try to get a point across, you have to invent or create a way to say it or to present it so that even though they've heard it before, it's still interesting. And maybe it's a different take that they've never considered. Well, that's what happened to me. That was this revelation I got in this sales training that I took. And it was basically about the word risk. And I'm titling this show Risk Versus Reward, but pretty much what kind of hit me in that sales training was the word risk. And I'm going to explain myself here in just a few minutes. And I thought when I got done, you know, I thought, hey, this applies to guns. Not just training, because, you know, people say, oh, Bob, you harp too much on training. Okay, I'm not gonna harp much on training in this podcast. As a matter of fact, based on a recent thread that's been going on the Gun Rights Radio Network on one of my recent shows, you know, the whole training argument is kind of starting to irritate me here a little bit. People taking out of context things that I said or things that I meant, but that comes with the territory. When you put out into public your thoughts and your opinions and things, you know, and when you start to get a pretty good amount of listeners like I've got, then you're going to have some people that are going to take things out of context. Anyway, let's get back to risk. Let's talk about choosing a gun. The sales trainers taught me in that one day. They said, you know, Bob, what you've got to do, well, it wasn't personalized, but this is the way I took it, okay? Matter of fact, they did a good job of personalizing it, which is what I try to do every week with this podcast, personalize something to you, even though I don't know you and haven't met 95% of you. He said, you've got to get your buyer to understand the risk of not buying from you. Now, think about that. Isn't that interesting? Let me say that again. He says, you've got to get the buyer to understand the risk of not buying from you. Not buying from you. Well, I'll think about that. He said, one of the most motivating factors is that the most people have is the fear of failure. People don't like to fail. And that's a motivating factor. And people will do a lot of things to avoid failure. People sometimes will make some pretty bad decisions to avoid failure. And I think a lot of that applies to guns. But that resonated with me. So, and by the way, I went out and I tried it. The training class I took was 2 weeks ago, the sales training class. And so the last several presentations that I've made, I've talked about the risks of doing business with my competitor. And lo and behold, it works out pretty good. I'm getting people's attention. Got an order yesterday, and it works, folks. You know, I started talking to my client about what might happen, how he might fail if he does business with my competitor. Now, you might say, well, Bob, that's scare tactics. No, not really. I'm not talking about playing on someone's fear. I'm talking about explaining to them how to mitigate risk, how to mitigate failure, okay? And that's what I think a lot of people can apply when they buy a gun. So let's talk about buying guns first. Let's talk about weighing the risks and the rewards of buying a gun. Now, you see a lot of different stuff out there about what to buy. And I've given people a lot of different advice, and one of the things I like to say is go out and rent 8 to 10 guns and shoot them before you ever make a buying decision. And I say this from a lot of experience, folks, because I've spent way too much money. I hate to count how much money I've actually spent on guns I didn't like. Because I didn't take my own advice back at the time when I was buying those guns. I didn't try before I buy. There's still so many places you can go out and rent guns. Do that. Try before you can buy. Or try before you buy. Well, ask yourself, what's the risk that I'm taking when I buy this gun versus the reward? I'll give you some examples. Right now, I'm carrying my Smith & Wesson M&P Shield, which, by the way, I just put a new front sight, a new AmeriGlow orange front sight. Pretty cool. You might have seen on Facebook recently, I posted that AmeriGlow's customer service is awesome. The previous front sight that I had on this Smith & Wesson Shield, the tritium vial started coming out of it. And I didn't like that, so I called up AmeriGlow, and not only did they send me a new one for free without asking any questions, but they upgraded me to the orange version, which I think is a little bit more money. So now I got this nice orange front sight, and I got one single tritium dot in the rear. It's their iDot Pro with an orange front sight. Well, the Smith & Wesson Shield has some advantages and disadvantages. Let's talk about risk. One of the risks I'm taking when I carry the Shield versus my Glock 19 is fewer rounds in the gun. I don't have nearly the ammo capacity versus my Glock 19, even a Glock 26, I mean, or an M&P 9 compact or an XD9 compact. You know, if you think about it, the Shield with the 8-round magazine gives me 9 rounds in the gun. Well, a Glock 26 starts at 10 rounds plus 1. A Glock 19 starts at 15 rounds plus 1. An M&P 9 compact is 12 rounds plus 1. So there are a lot of guns I could carry in a small package like this M&P Shield that give me more rounds. Well, that's a risk I take. And so I have to ask myself the question, well, what about the fear of failure? The fear of not being able to stop my threats because maybe there's more than one person? Maybe I miss a lot? Maybe I need more than the 9 rounds that this Smith & Wesson Shield holds. Yes, I can carry an extra magazine, but there is a risk I take in downsizing my ammo capacity before I have to reload. So that's a consideration. To me, now maybe not to you, I don't know, to me, oftentimes that risk is worth it. So what's my fear of failure? What's my fear of, or what risk am I taking by not going to another gun? Not carrying another gun that day when I leave my house. Well, compared to my Glock 19, I'm down 6 or 7 rounds. I guess I'm down 7 rounds compared to my Glock 19. So I have to ask myself, well, is the risk of carrying this smaller M&P Shield worth it? Well, what's my advantage? Well, my advantage is when I'm out making business calls, sometimes I can appendix carry. Well, most of the time, I can appendix carry this M&P Shield. And it's undetectable, folks. I mean, and if I carry it behind the hip, it's also undetectable. It's a little tough and uncomfortable sometimes for me to appendix carry my Glock 19. Now, some people appendix carry the Glock 19. Matter of fact, a week ago I was appendix carrying my Glock 19, but I was dressed differently. I wasn't making sales calls. I was just kind of bumming around town, and I had cargo shorts on and a very, very loose-fitting shirt and tennis shoes and all that. So I wasn't really concerned much about it. But sometimes a Glock 19, Glock 17, full-size M&P, full-size 1911, sometimes those things can be uncomfortable after all day carrying. For me, sometimes I'm willing to take that risk. Now, I've always been a big fan of ammo capacity. And I've always been a big fan of carrying a gun that holds as much ammo as you can possibly get away with. And that's the key, what you can get away with. So my risk is I can carry a gun all day that's uncomfortable and I might get made, or I could carry a smaller gun and not have that problem. Now, in one of my recent podcasts, I talked about the fact that on September 1st, even if I get made, it's not going to be a crime anymore, or at least, you know, if I inadvertently show my gun. It's not going to be a crime. That still doesn't mean that I want to get made. I don't really want anybody to know I'm carrying a gun. You know, I'm not a big fan of open carry. That's a whole separate subject. I think you should have the right to open carry, and I think that if you feel comfortable open carrying, you should be able to do it, but I'm just probably never going to do it. I'm always going to conceal. So I really don't want somebody to know I'm carrying my gun, whether it's casual environment or whether it's a business environment. That's just me. It's my personal preference. I don't care for anybody to know. And I think I've told you the story about a family event several years ago that got real ugly, and because people in the house knew I was carrying, it caused a real problem. You can go back and listen to some of my older episodes and hear about that if you haven't already. So, the risk of carrying a smaller gun to me at times is worth it. This Smith & Wesson M&P Shield is a really good shooter. I like it. So, when it comes to shootability, you know what? I'm not taking that much of a risk. I can shoot this thing pretty well. I mean, I was hitting a small piece of steel at 25 yards. The rifle class that Ben and I taught last weekend, even though it was a rifle class, we had a chance to mess around, or at least I was messing around with my handgun during some of the breaks and things like that. And I was, you know, popping a little steel, small little steel target, not a very big one, at 25 yards with no problem with my M&P Shield. So shootability, once you have skills and once you learn how to shoot, it's not that bad compared to a significantly larger gun. No, I'm probably never going to be able to shoot this M&P Shield as easy as I could shoot a big full-size 1911 or full-size pistol. But there again, let's talk about the risk. Where am I most likely to use a handgun in self-defense? At what range? You know, is it likely I'm going to be shooting beyond 20 yards? Probably not very likely. Statistics just don't back that up. However, I like to practice beyond 25 yards. In fact, I'm a firm believer in that. Some people argue with me. How about you? Are you practicing beyond 25 yards with your handguns? I think you should be. I think we all heard the story about the guy in Texas that saved a cop's life from about 55 yards away with a revolver, shot a bad guy from 55 yards. I believe it was a 357 Magnum revolver. Pretty good 55-yard shot, if you ask me. So you should practice at ranges greater than 25 yards. But it's not likely I'm probably ever going to need to do that. So one of the things I find, by the way, practicing at long distances makes me a whole lot better at close distances. Think about that. That's one of the benefits. So again, I got to weigh the risk. The risk versus the reward. So, you know, kind of getting back to that sales training. If I can present my story in a positive way and show the person the risk that he or she is going to take buying from my competitor, well, that's called the gentle art of persuasion, and that's where you actually help people make an informed decision. That is, if I tell the truth and don't lie, which I'm a firm believer in, telling the truth and not lying in presentations. And that includes on this podcast, and it also includes in my daily life and as a salesperson as well. And if there's a shortcoming of my product, I'm going to talk about it, and I'm not going to spend much time on it, but, you know, I will not lie just to get a sale. But I will point out the risk of doing business with my competition. I see nothing wrong with that. So that's part of risk versus reward in selecting a gun. What do you think about that? Let me take this time to talk about my voicemail. 210-646-1727 is the number. Or you can go to handgunworld.com. And if you look down at the right-hand side near the bottom of the page, you'll see a call me button. You can just click that call me button, put in your phone number. It keeps it private, but it connects your phone with my voicemail instantly. It's pretty cool. Then you can use the speaker on your computer or your iPad or iPhone or Android phone, whatever device you happen to be using, and you can talk to my voicemail. But what do you think? What do you think about weighing the risk versus reward? You know, sometimes I pocket carry. So let me hear from you on that. I pocket carry sometimes, and, you know, there's a big risk in that. It's, you know, a lot harder to draw out of a pocket than it is off of your belt somewhere. For most people. Although I've seen people with practice get pretty good at that. So is that a risk that I want to take? Not very often. I don't like to pocket carry very often. If I'm going to go through the trouble of carrying a gun, then I might as well carry one that I can use and use easily and effectively. Now, I know some of you, what you're probably thinking. You're probably thinking, Bob, it's not very likely that we're going to have to ever use our handgun in the first place. And you're right. Probably 99.5% of the people go through all their lives never having to use their gun to shoot anybody. That's great. That's good. That's a risk I'm not willing to take. I'm not willing to take the risk of Murphy's Law, and the one time I don't have my gun with me is when I need it the most. I'm not willing to risk my life that way. I believe in providing my own security for me and my family. I'm not willing to take the risk of depending on the police or my security alarm company to dispatch the police. I'm not willing to take the risk that a bad guy is going to bust in my house, hear my security alarm go off, and go, oh, gee, I think I'm going to leave here. Because he might not. So, I'm not willing to take the risk that when I'm out on a business trip like I'm out on right now, I'm not willing to take the risk of possibly getting attacked when I'm in an unfamiliar place and not having some way to defend myself. Are you? Are you willing to take that risk? That's a choice you got to make. But there's a risk that you weigh. So here, what's the fear of failure? Well, if you think about what I just said, the fear of failure is dying. That's my fear. All right? I get killed or severely injured because I had no way to protect myself. So think about that. That's another risk versus reward scenario. So if you think about it, risk versus reward pretty much figures into most of our daily lives, doesn't it? You know, I was talking to my brother just a few days ago. We were talking about TV. We were talking about cable TV and satellite TV, and I have DirecTV in my house. And there's only one reason. And you know, the reason I have DirecTV boils down to risk versus reward. It really does. It really does. The only reason, most of you know, if you've been listening to my show long enough, you know who my favorite football team is, my favorite NFL team. Right? I grew up in Wisconsin. I grew up 13 miles from Lambeau Field. So the Green Bay Packers are my favorite football team. Well, my risk is I don't get a chance to watch a Packer game if I don't have DirecTV. Why? Because DirecTV offers the NFL Sunday ticket. I'm a huge football fan. So my risk is that I'm going to miss watching the Packers, win or lose. I don't want to take that risk, so I switch to DirecTV. So it's a motivating factor that anybody, that's how people make decisions. We're talking about emotion here. It's a proven fact that people make decisions emotionally and back them up logically. I'll say that again. People make decisions emotionally, and they justify their decision with logic. Think about that. Most of the time, the decisions you make are emotional in nature. You back it up logically, right? You're having a beer with your friends, and you say, well, you know, the reason I did this, and you come up with all these logical reasons why, but really your decision was based on emotion. Sometimes the emotion was a friend of you said, that's a good gun to get. And so you took your friend's advice because you like your buddy, and your buddy's been shooting all of his life, right? So you think, well, hey, my buddy's been shooting all of his life. He must know something. And sometimes we make that bad assumption that because somebody's been doing something a long time, that they know what they're doing and then that they know what they're talking about. And so you take your buddy's advice and you buy that gun because he said, that's a good gun. And that was the emotion. And then about a month after shooting it, you say to yourself, geez, I don't like this gun. Okay? You're not getting the rewards that you thought. But you wanted to avoid failure, so you took your friend's advice and you bought the gun that your friend told you you should buy. Because you didn't listen to conventional wisdom, which says, go try a bunch of guns before you buy one, because everybody's different, everyone's hand is different, everybody's threshold for recoil is different, everybody's needs are different. I happen to love Glock 19s. A Glock 19 is not for everybody. So I'm not just going to blanketly say, you should buy a Glock 19, because it might not be the best gun for you and your needs. Maybe something like this M&P Shield that I have, you know, is better for you. Maybe an XD is better. Maybe a 1911 is a better gun. Maybe a revolver is a better gun for you. I don't know. But when you find out that the gun that your buddy told you to buy, because he was trying to get you to realize it was a good gun, oh, all of a sudden, you didn't get the reward. You don't like it now. It's no fun to shoot. Or it breaks too much, or it malfunctions too much. Well, guess what? Now you're faced with selling a gun and possibly losing money on it, and then having to come up with the money for another gun that you like better, because you didn't properly weigh that risk versus reward. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying don't take your friend's advice. But, you know, hey, some of us, we make that decision emotionally. We don't want to upset our friend, right? Our friend took a shooting, and our friend spent so much time with us shooting. And your friend goes to the gun store with you and says, that's a pretty good gun, and look at the price tag on that. It's at a discount. You should buy it. And so you do. Why? Because you didn't want to upset your friend. The risk of upsetting your buddy, the risk of upsetting your friend was too great. You didn't want to take it. So you bought the gun. You see what I mean? That's how so many of us make decisions. And then we expect that reward. We expect that reward from avoiding risk. See, I think a lot of people got it backwards. They think, well, if I take a risk, I'm going to get a reward. And sometimes that's true. You see that all the time with people who start businesses. They take the risk to start a business and they get the reward. But also, you think about this. Most businesses, most startup businesses, fail. So a lot of people don't start a business because they fear the failure. They don't want to take the risk. They fear that failure. It goes back to what I said earlier in this podcast. One of the biggest motivating factors is the fear of failure. People don't want to screw up. So they go to great lengths to avoid screwing up. Now, ask me how I know this. I've screwed up a lot, not just in my gun decisions, but in other life decisions, because I didn't think about, well, you know what? What's the risk of doing that versus doing something else? So I guess what I'm trying to say here is, let's talk about training for a minute now. Okay, I said I wasn't going to harp on training, but I've spoken 27 minutes now without talking about training. So if you listened to last Sunday's episode of Tom Gresham's Gun Talk, Tom spent the first 6 minutes of that podcast last week. Go back and listen to the August 11th, right? August 11th or August 12th episode? August 11th, I think. Go back and listen to that episode. The first part of it, he spent 6 minutes talking about the importance of training. Tom Gresham from Gun Talk. Well, what's the risk of not taking training? Think about that. Okay? What's the risk of not taking it? Well, maybe the risk of not taking it is not being able to perform when you need to. When the bad guys come calling and you're not ready, what is that risk? What's the risk to you, your family, and your loved ones? Interesting question, isn't it? Think about that. That's all I'm going to say about that. What's the risk of not taking training? When I went to Mag 40 the first time I went as a student, the second time I went because John Hadaway invited me to come back and help the students on the shooting line and do that. So I did the second time. But the second time I also spent a lot of time sitting through class. But I remember the first time I was there, the risk of not taking training like that Masada Yub teaches at Mag 40 is the risk of maybe the lawsuit that follows afterwards because You didn't follow the citizens' rules of engagement properly, or you weren't ready for the aftermath of that shooting. Okay? I mean, the George Zimmerman case pretty much brought to light for everybody in America who carries a gun what the aftermath can be like. So, you know, are you ready for that stuff? That's why I think Mag 40 is an awesome class, because, and by the way, that's training, folks. You know, I tell you what, I can't see why someone would actually go through life carrying a gun and not taking some similar class like that on the rules of engagement. This, I mean, you know, Masada Yub's not the only one who teaches it, but, you know, if he's not the best, he's, wow, I mean, you know, he's been doing it so long, he's phenomenal. But there's other people that teach that sort of stuff. You know, take a class like that. What's the risk of being irresponsible with your handgun and shooting somebody when you might not have been justified to do it? Wow! Think about that risk. Holy cow. You know, you talk about risk versus reward. Dang, that's some risk right there, folks. And again, the fear of failure. What motivates people? The fear of failure. Are you really willing to take that risk? So think, you know, and I know some of us, a lot of us were on tight budgets, so training is difficult to afford. And some of us just go get the required training that's necessary, that our state requires to give us the permit to carry a gun, which we shouldn't need anyway. We shouldn't need the permits, but that's a whole other subject. Okay, and maybe your state's one that is more constitutional in nature. Maybe your state says, well, you don't necessarily need to take a class. All you got to do is pay a fee and pass a background check. But what's the risk in doing that? What's the risk in just paying a fee and passing a background check? Okay, think about that. Okay, let's take a quick break, and I'll be right back with some more risk versus reward talk.
Whenever you see big city mayors campaigning for gun control, rows of uneasy-looking police officers are forced to stand behind the mayors. The reason our police friends are uneasy is they don't buy into the mayor's political scam. The president of the Black Police Caucus said his members believe there should be no gun rationing, and nearly 100% of their membership thinks criminals are able to obtain guns through illegal means. Likewise, 94% of the National Association of the Chiefs of Police believe that citizens should be able to purchase firearms for self-defense and sporting purposes. Maybe this is why billionaire New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg called the 32,000-member Fraternal Order of Police a fringe group, because unlike Michael, cops know who the good guys are, namely you, not Bloomberg. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Okay, continuing with this risk versus reward discussion, now let's talk about gear. You know, a lot of people, unfortunately, when it comes to gear, I'm not talking about the gun, I'm talking about the rest of the gear, your belt and your holster and your ammo. People cheap out sometimes when they get gear. Yeah, it never ceases to amaze me. I see people that have an $850 beautiful, gorgeous pistol and a cheap belt that's not a gun belt and a real cheap holster that's not doing the proper job that a holster should do. And it just messes everything up. Well, let's talk about the risk in that. Okay, first of all, I've said this before, I'll say it again, the belt is so important in your concealed carry system. That belt helps support the weight of the pistol. It helps hold that pistol up against your body. It helps conceal that gun if you're concealing it. Even if you're open carrying, it still helps distribute the weight of the pistol so that it's comfortable, so you can carry it all day long, which is the way you need to. And of course, the holster is a big deal. How the holster functions. Does the holster completely cover the trigger guard? Wow, what's the risk of having a holster that doesn't properly cover the trigger guard? YouTube that. YouTube that and watch some of those videos. Holsters that fail and people that shoot themselves because holsters fail. Okay? What's the risk in carrying in certain positions on your body? I'm a big believer in appendix carry, but hey, there's a risk in appendix carrying. Now, I've weighed that risk versus reward. Here's the way I look at it. If I'm carrying a gun and I need to use my gun, I probably need to use it right now. I mean, the crap has hit the fan. I got no other choice. I need it now, and I need to be fast. For me, I don't know about you, but for me, I can draw faster from appendix carry position. I can draw faster from appendix carry. If I'm flat on my back, I can draw a lot easier from appendix carry. If I'm knocked on my back, and if you think you're not going to be knocked on your back in a fight, think again. Those of you who train in martial arts, you know what I'm talking about. Why do you think Brazilian jiu-jitsu, why do you think ground fighting is so popular? Why do you think it's important to know how to ground fight? Because guess what? So many fights end up going to the ground. Well, if the fight goes to the ground and you haven't drawn your pistol yet, you need to be thinking about those kinds of scenarios, don't you? How are you going to react to that? So I would rather appendix carry. I'd rather have easier access for me. For me, it gives me easier access to my gun. If I'm pinned up against my car, I'm pinned up. If my back is pinned up against a wall, well, it's going to be easier for me to draw from the appendix position. When I'm sitting in my car, if I have to use my gun while I'm sitting in my car, it's easier for me to draw from appendix position. Okay. Oh, Bob, you're going to sweep yourself if you do that. Other podcasters took me to task one day because, you know, I talked about sitting in my car, carrying in the appendix position. Oh, what if you have to use your gun? You're going to sweep yourself. Well, yeah, guess what? I'm going to sweep myself. If I keep my booger hook off the bang switch, then hopefully that's not going to be an issue. To me, the risk is worth it because when I'm sitting in my car, and by the way, I borrowed a car one time. It was a rental. It was a rental. I got a Camaro as a rental. Hey, how about that? Pretty cool, huh? It was a 2013 Camaro. Well, if you sit in a 2013 Camaro, those seats, you know, the sides of those seats, they kind of come, they wrap around the side. Well, guess what? If my pistol is being carried at the 4 o'clock position behind my right hip, it's tougher for me to reach because of the way the seats in the Camaro are designed. It's a little tougher for me to reach and get that pistol out and drawn and on target. A lot harder to do than it is from the appendix carry position. And I believe it's a training issue. And by the way, if you watch, if you're a member of our Shooters Club, those of you who are a member of our Shooters Club, the videos that Ben and I put out once a month, in fact, last month we put out two videos. One of the videos there, I used my shield to demonstrate how safe and effective appendix carry can be. I busted some myths with that video. There's a way you can carry your gun appendix and draw it appendix without sweeping your femoral artery. Anybody that tells you that that's not possible doesn't know how to appendix carry properly and hasn't practiced it. You got to be a member of our Shooters Club to video or to see the video. Sorry about that, but quite a few of you are. And if not, if you're not a member, you can go to handgunworld.com, click the Shooters Club page. It's the first one. Look at the menu underneath my logo, and the first thing you see there is Shooters Club. You can sign up for the Shooters Club, support our show, support our podcast, support the work that Ben and I do. And if you can't make it to one of our training classes or you simply can't afford to travel to training, if you can afford $75 a year, you can watch our videos, and you'll see my video entitled Appendix Carry, Safe and Effective. And I used my Smith & Wesson shield, a Remora holster, and I had a sturdy belt on. And those three devices right there, I showed how appendix carry can be safe and effective. Okay? And how not to sweep femoral artery when drawing. Now, I demonstrated it from a standing position. And that's one thing I like about the Remora holster. I can move the gun around. I can move the gun around. And when I carry appendix, you know, and I'm sitting, sorry, I know where the femoral artery is. When I carry appendix, I'm carrying it pretty much at about 12:30. and that muzzle is not pointing at my femoral artery. So, by the way, and it's like I said, when I'm sitting, I can draw it and I can get it up on target without sweeping myself. There's a way to do it. Matter of fact, I think I'm probably going to make another YouTube video on that coming up soon. I might put that on the public YouTube channel that I have. So I've weighed the risk, and for me, and by the way, I can conceal better in the appendix carry position, which is important for me, being able to conceal. That's also a place that most people don't touch, if you think about it. You know what I mean? Heck, in church. You know, sometimes you see somebody, you see a friend from church, you know, and you give each other hugs. You know, well, hey, if you're carrying, if I'm carrying back there at 3:30 or 4 o'clock, that's a common place when people give you a hug. You know, that's a common place where their hands may go. But when I'm carrying appendix, that's not normally where someone is going to be able to touch me and know that there's a gun there, except for people that I want to be touching me there, like my wife. Okay, so that's why appendix carry works for me, and I weigh the risk. I weigh the risk, and for me, the small amount of risk is worth the reward that I get in carrying in the appendix carry position. So ask yourself, well, what's the risk I take if I don't get that good quality belt? What's the risk I take if I don't get that good holster? What's the risk I take if I don't buy the absolute best ammunition that I can carry in my gun? You know, people say, oh, I'm not going to buy that carry ammo. It's $1.50 a round. Let me ask you a question. Isn't your life worth $1.50 per round? Right? I mean, the average person, what's the rule of threes? I think it's still pretty true today. Most gunfights are over in three shots, 3 yards, and 3 seconds. Okay, let's extend that to 5, 5, and 5. Maybe it's 5 shots, 5 seconds at 5 yards. Still, 5 rounds times $1.50, isn't your life worth $7.50? Buy the best ammo you can absolutely afford. Buy good stuff. Don't cheap out on concealed carry ammo. If you want to cheap out on ammo, cheap out on practice ammo. People say, well, it malfunctions. Well, good. Then you get to practice clearing malfunctions. Which, by the way, what's the risk that you take if you don't practice clearing a malfunction? Ask yourself, what's going to be that risk? So buy some cheap stuff. Buy the cheap ammo that's likely to malfunction once in a while. You get some good malfunction clearing practice. If you come to our class, you'll get that. Okay, we had very expensive rifles malfunctioning in last week's rifle fighting class that Ben and I taught. Our 4-hour rifle fighting dynamics class. Some very expensive rifles in that class were choking. It happens. It's just the way it is. These are pieces of machinery. What's the risk you take in not knowing how to properly clear that malfunction and get back in the fight? What's the risk you take if your belt sucks? What's the risk you take if you don't have a good quality holster? See what I mean? You know, the fear of failure. This is what governs a lot of decisions. Unfortunately, some people don't take this kind of stuff seriously enough. And then it hurts them at the worst possible moment. Okay, so as you can see, where I'm going with all this is serious business, this carrying a gun stuff. This is serious stuff here. I really hope you don't take this casually, because I don't think it's a casual subject. You know, here's the point that I'm going to close with. Let's look at all the anti-gunners out there, okay? What do the anti-gun people use to beat us over the head with? Well, they call us irresponsible. They call us untrained. They call us vigilantes, okay? They say we don't know what we're doing. I think it's kind of funny. Their argument is so stupid, because here's why. You know, they say, well, only the police should have guns. Police and military. Well, there's a lot of police that just simply don't train with their handguns. I'm not saying that applies to all cops, but there are a lot of cops that are not gun people. They don't train with their handguns. I know. I've shot with them. I've shot with them in IDPA matches. They've come to some of my classes. And they're not very good. So the anti-gunners go, well, only the law enforcement and military should have guns, not private citizens, because you private citizens, you don't know what you're doing. You're not trained. Well, why don't you take that argument away from the anti-gunners? Why don't you train? Why don't you be responsible? Why don't you have good stuff? Don't take the risk of an anti-gunner singling you out and saying, look, you knucklehead, you're exactly what I'm talking about. You shouldn't be owning one of those guns because you don't know what you're doing with it. So I think we have a level of responsibility to keep when we do something as serious as carry a gun, because the people's eyes are on us, especially the anti-gun politicians. Their eyes are on us, and they jump at every chance they can get, don't they? Don't they jump at every chance they can get to point the finger and go, hee-hee-hee, see, you don't know what you're doing. You shouldn't have these things, and we want to ban them. Why are there still so many knuckleheads that give anti-gun politicians ammo, no pun intended? Why are there so many knuckleheads that give these politicians the ammo to hang them with and to single them out and make them look like doofuses that shouldn't have a gun in front of the American public? I mean, the media jumps at every chance they can to do that. And all the race baiters and everything jump at every chance they can to do that. Let's quit doing that. Let's quit giving them that type of ability. So think about that. What's the risk? What's the risk that those of you, you and me, who listen to this show, I'm assuming because you're listening to this show right now, that you're into gun rights. Can we all agree on that? Are you into gun rights? I hope so. Hopefully that's why you're taking the time to listen to a guy like me yak on the internet about gun rights and stuff like that. So why do you want to take the risk of being singled out as someone that doesn't know what they're doing? So select good gear. Select good gear, good ammo, good handguns, and make good decisions about it. So that's my risk versus reward analysis. But when I heard that sales trainer say that one of the greatest persuasion techniques that you can do is to help people realize the risk of doing business with your competitor. And it makes them feel good because then they feel like they've made the right decision, that, wow, I've avoided this potential failure point here. Makes them feel good about themselves. That's the emotion that they use to make the decision. And then they go have beer with their buddies and they talk about all the logical reasons why they made that decision, when you and I both know it was an emotional decision, it was a fear of failure, it was the risk of looking bad and making the wrong decision that made them do what they did. And I thought, well, you know what? That applies to handguns, and I'm going to do a podcast about that. And I guess it applies not just to handguns, shotguns, rifles, any kind of gun you own. Think about it and think about what I said. Okay, a couple of announcements that I want to talk about here to close the show. Ben and I put up some new classes. We're doing a full day of rifle fighting dynamics in San Antonio. We just recently did a four-hour class because it's been so hot, over 100 degrees. We didn't think that anybody wanted to train an entire day in the 100-degree heat. The next one's coming up October 12th, which is a Saturday. Rifle fighting dynamics. October 12th is usually pretty nice weather here in San Antonio area. You should be able to last, no problem, from about 9 until 4:30. And you can check that out over at handgunworld.com. Any kind of rifle's okay. If you want to bring a carbine, the last rifle course, one guy brought a High Point 40 caliber. Hey, the thing shot great, ran great, okay? Somebody else brought some 9mm carbine that I'd never heard of before. And he got some practice clearing malfunctions, but hey, he also got to run his rifle for a day and hopefully learn some things, or for half a day. But this is going to be a full-day class. Bring any rifle you want. We're going to primarily teach the AR-style rifle, but if you want to bring an AK, you want to bring a carbine, whatever. Again, October 12th, Saturday, Rifle Fighting Dynamics in San Antonio. We're also going down to the Rio Grande Valley. We're going down to Brownsville. So if I got any listeners down in McAllen, Harlingen, Brownsville, Victoria, Corpus Christi, that whole area down there, way down south, we're going down October 5th down to Brownsville to teach Beyond Concealed Carry. And we got a surprise coming up for you in December. Ben and I are still trying to work the deals out, or work out the details, excuse me. It's going to be a two-day event coming up in first week in December. Hey, folks, I got to tell you, the first week in December in South Texas, the weather's usually pretty nice, especially those of you who live up north. Get away from the snow and the cold. Come down to South Texas. Come to San Antonio. Make a long weekend out of it. Enjoy some nice weather. It's usually between 50 and 60 degrees normally. Sometimes even closer to 70, first week of December in San Antonio. So we're going to have a nice two-day event coming up for you during that time. We've also got level two of Beyond Concealed Carry. For those of you who have graduated from our level one, or if you've taken some other bona fide class from a good instructor somewhere else, we'll accept that. That's going to be on September 14th and 15th. September 14th and 15th. A lot of cool stuff. That's a 600-round course. What's going to be really cool is we're going to be shooting multiple bad guys, multiple targets, moving targets, a lot of one-handed shooting, a lot of shooting with one hand on the move, a lot of barricade shooting, moving steel targets, and things like that. That's going to be a lot of fun. So that's September 14th and 15th. That's 2 days. That's Beyond Concealed Carry Level 2. And, of course, you know, I've been getting some emails from some of you saying, well, you know, you can't travel, or it's just not quite in the budget right now. And I understand that. So that's why we developed the Shooters Club video podcasts that we do, and audio. There's 8 or 9 audio podcasts. And every month we put up at least a video, so there's like between 10 and 12 videos now so far up there, and more going up every month. Good stuff. Ben and I film a lot of pretty cool stuff that seems to be getting a lot of really good reviews. So that's the next best thing. Join the Shooters Club for only $75 per year, and there's some other incentives that are going to be available for Shooters Club members that I should be able to announce next month in September. Incentives that are going to be for every member, not just somebody who wins, but every member, and it's going to be available through the end of the year. So if you want to support my podcast that way. Last but not least, my Amazon store. If you're going to buy something from Amazon, you don't even have to spend any extra money to support my show. Just buy whatever you're going to buy from the Amazon store link on my website at handgunworld.com. And I'll earn a small little fee, and it'll help support my show. So with all that said, I hope that this was something that got you thinking about the risk of not doing something as it pertains to guns, concealed carry, gear and training, and things like that. I'm Bob Main. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Remember that the loudest sound a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. And give every pistol you own a 1,000-round trigger job. Shoot straight, shoot safe. Talk to you next week.